we're delighted to hear from Melanie Levay, who wants to share, or has been asked to share with us today, her reflections about both the life and work of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. and about her experiences as growing up as a person of color in this area.
Good morning, everyone. And thank you for good morning. Thank you for inviting me to speak on this Sunday before Martin Luther King Day. It is always a privilege and a pleasure to speak with members of the Unitarian Church. When Steve originally asked me to speak about my experiences growing up in New Hampshire, I initially thought there's not much of a story here. I look back on my years growing up as pretty positive. Granted, life was not always easy, but in reflection, I grew up in a great neighborhood. I had a myriad of wonderful friends and family. I co-founded a business, and I'm proud to call New Hampshire my home. I cannot speak for the experiences of all Blacks in New Hampshire, as everyone has a different perspective. I come from a family of six children, and we each have our own perspective. Upon further consideration, I thought this was a wonderful opportunity to share experiences, raise issues, and celebrate the civil rights movement and the accomplishments of Dr. King. My parents, Rupal and Betty Perkins, moved from Ohio to Boston, Mass., where my mother studied at Beth Israel Hospital, and my father worked as a draftsman. In the early 60s, my father was offered a position at Sanders Associates and moved my two brothers and I to Nashua. There were only a handful of Blacks in Nashua at the time. We lived in an apartment on Thayer Court. A few years later, we moved to our house on Durham Street. I recall my mother had once showed me the house she initially wanted and explained that the realtor would not sell to my parents because they were Black. Many years later, I learned that my father was able to purchase our home on Durham Street and go around the realtors with the help of his peers from Sanders. We were living the American dream until my parents divorced when I was seven. This left my mother to bring up six children on her own. She always worked very hard, both on her career as a dietitian and providing for our family. I felt very fortunate to have her as a role model. As I grew up, I encountered very few instances of blatant prejudice. Once in elementary school, someone called me a nigger. I cried to my mother and asked why. She explained that people say things out of ignorance and assured me that I was just as good, if not better, than the next person. In junior high, I recall a boy named David called me a nigger. I immediately went to the principal and told him it was unacceptable. I never heard those words from him again. In the early 60s and 70s, the standards of beauty were not geared towards African Americans. There were very few role models for young Black girls. Remember the saying, blondes have more fun? Well, I wasn't a blonde then. My childhood friends told me that if I wanted to be white like them, all I had to do was stand in front of the sink and pray to be white, and it would happen. Well, I only did that once. I am happy to say that I'm very proud of the color of my skin. I don't have to work for that perfect tan. I'm proud of my thick lips, because today women pay thousands or maybe hundreds for collagen treatments. Thankfully, today's role models come in every nationality, every shape, and every size. After high school, I started dating Scott, my husband. Early on, we found out that his parents opposed our relationship because I was Black. They insisted that we break up or be banished from the family. Well, Scott and I broke up for about 24 hours. We didn't see anything wrong with our relationship. We were in love and we had lots in common. We also had a strong support system in our friends who accepted our relationship unconditionally. Sometime later, I would learn that when I was born, interracial relationships were illegal in some states. Even as recently as the year 2000, the law against interracial marriage was stricken from the books in the state of Georgia. Growing up in a state with few minorities, it was not uncommon to be the only person of color in the room. I was not bothered by this, but simply made the observation. It was never a problem making friends or acquaintances. Some of my philosophies that helped me get through life were very, very basic. Philosophies like finding common ground. If you talk to a person long enough, you are bound to find commonality. This is how we build friendships, relationships, and bridges. In October of last year, I canvassed for voter registration with Ellen Barr. We started the canvassing as strangers, but quickly got to know each other. Another philosophy is don't look for barriers or obstacles. If you look for a problem, if you look for someone to be prejudiced, if you look to fail, you will. This doesn't mean you go through life with blinders, but only that you don't let the challenges blind you from your goals. Another philosophy is that people can only accept what we let them. My mother-in-law is an 87-year-old French woman who has come a long way. My in-laws now treat my entire family as if it were their own. They love their granddaughter, Logan, and embrace the union of my brother and his partner. They have come far in 20 years and could not have done so if we did not introduce them to different situations. Another philosophy is to speak out and take action when you disagree. My husband, Scott, spoke out in action when he did not agree with his parents. I give him much credit for not giving in to the status quo and suffering through estrangement from his family just to be with me. Rosa Parks spoke out when she refused to sit in the back of the bus. You and I have the power to speak out against things we disagree with. Lastly, smile. Smiling is a great way to let people know you're friendly. It's a great conversation starter and immediately brings down people's defenses. I've been reading an autobiography about Martin Luther King, and I'd like to share pieces with you. I cannot help but be moved by this man, a man who grew up in the segregated South, a man who experienced racism firsthand in a place where people, black people, were treated like second-class citizens, in a place where laws were created to suppress and humiliate them, eating at lunch counters, drinking out of separate fountains, and riding separate sections of the bus. In 1951, Dr. King entered Boston University School of Theology. He found acceptance amongst his peers and professors and experienced many advantages he had been deprived of in the segregated South. However, he did encounter forms of subtle prejudice. Dr. King states, "I remember very well trying to find a place to live. I went into place after place where there were signs that said rooms were for rent. They were for rent until they found out I was a Negro, and suddenly they had just been rented." Very much like my parents' experience. Upon graduating from college, Dr. King had career prospects in New York, Massachusetts, Chicago, and Atlanta's Dexter Avenue Baptist Church, where he accepted a position as pastor. Although hesitant about returning to the South, Dr. King and his wife, Coretta, felt they had a moral obligation to return, an obligation to do something about the problems that they had encountered in their youth. It was Martin Luther King's destiny to speak out against injustices in word and deed. You cannot help but admire the nonviolent philosophies of Dr. King. These philosophies were based on the teachings of Gandhi and Thoreau. When arrested for fabricated infractions such as loitering or boycotting, Dr. King chose to do the time rather than pay the fine. He stated that he was proud of his crime. It was a crime of joining my people in a nonviolent protest against injustice. It was a crime of seeking to instill within my people a sense of dignity, of self-respect. It was a crime of desiring for my people the unalienable rights of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. It was above all the crime of seeking to convince my people that non-cooperation with evil is just as much a moral duty as is cooperation with good. As I read about Rosa Parks' marches on Selma and Birmingham and the marches on Washington, I am acutely aware that others marched and fought so that I could have freedom and equality. Being too young to take part in the civil rights movement of the 60s, I often wondered, if I had been an adult at that time, what role would I have played? Would I have been marching, or would I stay home? What role would you have played? I would like to think that we would be marching and fighting for freedom and equality. In the spring of 2003, I had heard that an NAACP group was forming in Nashua and was very excited about the prospects. I joined the effort to form the NAACP in Nashua, and after a year of hard work building membership, we received our charter in February of 2004. I currently serve as vice president. The issues that we face today are not as blatant as segregation and lynching. Yet we do have issues of discrimination, racial profiling, and disenfranchisement that need to be addressed. If you think prejudice is all but dead, I can assure you it is not. A friend of mine recently told me a story of a woman who had her car serviced at a local garage. The woman complained that she would never bring her car back to that establishment because a black man serviced her car. This woman brought her complaint to management. The management quickly sided with the employee and were not bothered with the loss of this customer's business. The bad news is that there is still prejudice. The good news is that there are still good people who stand against it. The NAACP is also in the business of being proactive and disseminating information that may be helpful to others. Last year, during the presidential election, we coordinated events and participated in canvassing for voter empowerment. No, the issues are not like those of the 60s, but when there is an issue, we will be there to address it. In closing, I would like to thank you once again for inviting me to speak. I must also reiterate that growing up black in New Hampshire is very different for every person. Imagine, if you will, a child living in Atlanta or Maryland, where there are a lot more people of color, people like them, than moving to a state like New Hampshire, in which 2% of the population is black, 11% of the population are minorities. The experience would be very different than mine. However, regardless of where we come from, where we grew up, the color of our skin, our nationality, our gender, or sexual orientation, we are all benefactors of the civil rights movement. We owe a debt of gratitude not only to Dr. King, but to people like Rosa Parks and 50,000 Negro people in Montgomery, Alabama, who came to discover that it is better to walk in dignity than to ride on buses. People like Cheney, Goodman, and Schwerner, who were slain for helping others to pursue the right to vote. Four young girls who died in the Birmingham church and showed the world the innocence lost because of racism. Presidents Kennedy and Johnson, leaders that supported civil rights, and to 20 million blacks and whites who marched on Washington in the summer of 1963. Martin Luther King had a dream. Let us make that dream a reality. Let's join together and sing our closing hymn, number 119, Once to Every Soul and Nation.